Not that long ago, I was sitting with a problem. I had just joined 2 back-to-back digital business summits. Each one was one of those big multi-creator events where you get access to something like 20 to 40 different sessions. Great stuff. Really good. And I'd watched maybe 3 or 4 of the sessions before the replay window was closing, which meant I had roughly 26 hours of content I hadn't touched. 26 hours. So I did what I always do when I have a big information management problem. I went to my tools. I pulled up the Claude extension in Chrome to look at all the videos and their timestamps to try and estimate how long it would realistically take me to get through all of them. I tried to use my preferred calendar app, Morgan, which has an AI planner to block out some calendar time. I was calculating, logisticsing, trying to figure out how to fit 26 hours of content into a life that was already full. I spent about 20 minutes doing this. And at some point, I stopped and asked a completely different question. One of the summit creators had built a custom GPT specifically for their event, trained on all the sessions, all the materials. And instead of asking, how do I get through all of this? I asked, given what I'm actually trying to do right now with my business, which 2 or 3 of these sessions would actually help me in my situation? 90 seconds later, I had 3 specific sessions, not a list of 40, 3, with a note on how to integrate what I'd learned into my podcast and in my next workshop. That's worth naming. I had tools the entire time. I was using tools during those 20 minutes of logistics spiral. What changed wasn't the tool. What changed was the question. And that's what this episode is about. I work with small business owners who are in tech overwhelm. And when they come to me, they usually describe the problem as a tool problem. I have too many tools and nothing connects. The platforms I rely on keep getting worse. I can't decide what to use, so I just don't. Or I keep switching. Those are real problems. I'm not dismissing them. But underneath almost every one of those situations, there's something else happening first. I can name 3 patterns because I do all 3 of them. The first one is what I'm going to call the Pinterest problem. You know how you can spend an afternoon on Pinterest looking at living room inspiration and feeling vaguely productive, even though your living room looks exactly the same? I do this with tools. I research project management systems when I actually need to finish my content calendar. I compare note-taking apps when the real problem is that I haven't decided what I'm trying to capture. The browsing feels like work. It is not work. The second is the fresh start dopamine hit. There is a specific feeling that comes with a new tool, a new system, a new setup. Everything feels clean and possible. The problem hasn't been solved yet, which means it also hasn't been failed yet. That feeling is real and it is genuinely pleasant, and it's also completely disconnected from whether the tool will actually help you. We mistake the feeling of starting for the feeling of progress. The third is what I think of as mastery as avoidance. Learning a tool's features is easier than answering the harder question underneath. What are you actually trying to do? And why hasn't that happened yet? When I don't know what I want my podcast workflow to look like, it's much easier to learn 4 more things about my recording process or the software than to sit with the actual question. Learning features is concrete. The underlying question is murky. We gravitate toward concrete. I learned that about myself in the most mundane way possible. I have a 4-year-old who loves my phone, games especially. She will cheerfully open anything on my home screen. And at some point, I realized that having a tiny person who might grab at my phone at any moment has made me more curatorial about what lived on it. I wasn't more disciplined about my apps. I just started asking a different question. Does this deserve this space? That shift from this looks useful to does this earn its spot is the whole episode in miniature. A constraint forced a better question. And the better question did more for my digital life than any app review ever could. Thank you. I want to tell you a story. Actually, it's several stories, but they're really one story told over 15 years. A long time ago, I bought a permanent account on LiveJournal. LiveJournal was my community, my writing space, my archive. When the platform started to shift, ownership changes, policy changes, the vibe just getting worse, I tried to move to DreamWidth, but I couldn't fully leave. I had this whole memory system I'd built for bookmarking and organizing posts, and it couldn't be completely backed up. And then there was the sunk cost of that permanent account whispering, "You paid for this forever. You can't just walk away." If someone had asked me then, "If LiveJournal disappeared tomorrow, what would you actually lose?" I would have had a complicated answer. And that complicated answer was the problem. I didn't know what I was holding on to or why. Then the internet shifted underneath me. First came MySpace and Friendster, and then Facebook became a thing with a capital T and opening up to non-college students. Then came Tumblr. Social media changed what online community even looked like. The open web, long-form blogging world that I'd invested in wasn't gone. It just wasn't where the conversation was anymore. The platform didn't fail me. The ecosystem moved. Then my move from Evernote to Notion happened. This is the one I don't regret, but it also taught me the most about what migration actually costs. I thought I'd moved everything over. Turns out a bunch of notes I cared about were actually embedded or annotated PDFs that Evernote's export, or maybe Notion's import, I'm still not entirely sure, didn't handle cleanly. I'm still trying to find those today, still dealing with it. The most recent move was off Twitter. And Twitter didn't just decline slowly, it became actively hostile. It turned into X, and though my usage had dwindled over the years as it became harder and harder to succeed at Twitter, it altogether became something I didn't want to be a part of. So I made the decision. I didn't take a break. I shut down both my accounts. I landed lightly on a Mastodon instance, but I wasn't looking for the next Twitter. I was asking a different question entirely. What do I actually want from social media now? And the answer turned out to be not much. That was a real answer, a useful one. Even a good move has friction when you haven't asked, what exactly am I bringing with me and in what format? Here's why I'm telling you all this. Each of these stories is a different flavor of the same problem. Sunk costs, ecosystem shifts, hostile pivots, migration friction. And in every case, the people who navigate those shifts well, including eventually me, aren't the ones who found the right tool. They're the ones who kept asking the right questions about what they actually needed. Here's something I want you to try. Pick one tool you use every day, your project manager, your notes app, your calendar, and ask yourself, if this disappeared tomorrow, what would I actually lose? If the answer is everything, that's not a reason to panic. It's a signal. It means your system is built around someone else's platform instead of around your own thinking. And that's fixable, but it starts with the question. There's a thing in librarianship called the reference interview. When someone walks up to the desk and says, "I need a book on management," a librarian doesn't go to pull a management book off the shelf. We ask questions. What's going on? What are you working on? And the person talks. Somewhere in that talking, what they actually need becomes visible. And it's almost never just a management book. It works because most people can tell a story even when they can't articulate exactly what they need. They can describe what's happening. The story contains the answer. The questions just make space for it to surface. We don't ask, "What book do you want?" We ask questions that let you tell us what you actually need. Because most of the time, the first thing someone asks for isn't what they're actually looking for. That's the reference interview. And what I'm about to give you is a way to do a reference interview on yourself. Not a tool recommendation, not a stack. Four questions in order. A self-directed reference interview you can run before you adopt any new tool, workflow, or system. Answer them honestly and let the answers do the diagnosing. I use these on myself too, by the way, especially when I realize that I have enough browser tabs comparing tools I already have to turn into a full-on tab stack or group of their own. Here we go. Question one. Walk me through the last time you tried to do this thing. Get a tool for some purpose, create a workflow, adopt a system. What actually happened? Not what's your goal now. I want to hear about the last time, specifically, that you did something like this, whatever this is. And if you're thinking, but I've never done this exact thing before, zoom out. You're not looking for the last time you tried this specific tool or this specific workflow. You're looking for the last time you were in this position, overwhelmed by options, trying to get organized, staring at a problem you couldn't quite name. Maybe it was a totally different area of your life. Maybe the last time you felt this exact flavor of stuck when you were trying to figure out meal planning, or reorganizing your garage, or choosing a school for your kid. The context doesn't have to match. The pattern does. That feeling of, I need a system for this, followed by the spiral of researching solutions instead of clarifying the problem. So, what did you open first? What did you try? Where did it slow down or stop? Telling the story of what happened is almost always more useful than trying to explain the problem. And it's easier. We can tell stories even when we can't define goals. And honestly, a story from a different context can be even more revealing because you're not defensive about it. You can see the pattern more clearly when it's not wrapped up in the thing that's frustrating you right now. Question two, if this worked, what would you be able to do tomorrow that you can't do today? Not the vision, tomorrow. One thing, concrete. If you can name it clearly, you've just defined what success looks like. And now you have something to actually evaluate tools against. If you can't name it, that's information too. It means working hasn't been defined yet. And you can't build towards something that you haven't described. Question three. Have you done this successfully before, even in a messy duct tape way? Yes or no? If yes, you know what done looks like, which means the question is whether your current setup actually supports it. That's a tool problem. Look at the tools. If no, the task isn't fully defined yet. No tool can solve an undefined problem. That's a clarity problem. And the fix is a clearer description, not a better app. I like this question because it does the diagnostic without asking you to already know the diagnosis. You can't easily answer, is this a tool problem or a clarity problem, from inside the overwhelm. But you can answer, have I done this before? And that answer tells you which problem you actually have. Question four, what's the one thing you need to know or have in order to take the next step? Not the whole system, not the overhaul. Just the one piece, information, decision, resource, that would let you move forward if you had it. This is the librarian's closing question at the reference desk. Not what do you want, but what would help you most right now? It's smaller and more specific. It's actually answerable. And it almost always points at something real. Let me show you how this works. Remember the summit story I told you at the top of the episode? 26 hours of content, replay window closing. Let's run that through the filter. Question one, walk me through the last time you tried to do this. What actually happened? I opened the full session list. I got overwhelmed. I bookmarked a bunch of things, the VIP page, the classroom on school, the speaker profiles. I opened a calendar app to try and schedule it all. I watched nothing. That narration tells you everything. It's not a time management problem, it's a triage problem. Question two, if this worked, what would you be able to do tomorrow? I'd have one concrete email marketing tactic implemented, not I absorb 26 hours of wisdom. One tactic, working. That answer cuts 40 sessions down to maybe 3 or 4. Question three, have you done this before, even messily? Actually, yes, plenty of times, whether it was a course I enrolled in coming to an end and me needing to cram, or another person's availability window closing, or even me finishing writing a 60,000 word novel in a month. What made it work for me was that I had a specific problem to solve. Finish the course, work with this person before they're booked up, write the novel before the month's end, and gift it to someone. So, the condition I need is a defined problem before I start consuming. Question four, what's the one thing you need to take the next step? Not plan my summit schedule, just find out which sessions address my specific situation. So, I got the VIP pass. I got the link to the audio vault knowing that for me, I was more likely to be able to start and stop an audio recording than I would be video, especially one that could get lost in my browser tabs. I queued up the specific sessions that would address my situation, growing my email list from basically scratch. One problem, one next step. That's the unlocking move. 4 questions, 90 seconds, and 26 hours of content became 3 sessions. Here's the other thing I realized about this framework. You can run it backwards too, retroactively. Remember those platform migrations I told you about? If I'd had these 4 questions when I was agonizing over whether to leave Twitter, walk me through the last time you used Twitter, what actually happened, just telling that story, just narrating the last time I'd actually been on the platform and what it felt like, that alone would have surfaced how bad it had gotten. I wouldn't have needed a pros and cons list. The narration would have been enough. That's what makes this feel real to me. It's not just a forward-looking decision tool. It works on decisions you've already made, been making, or avoiding making. I don't want this to be a one-time thing. These questions are a diagnostic habit. Many librarians do reference interviews several times per day. It's a muscle, not a one-time revelation. And you can build that muscle too. Here's what I've noticed in my own life. I've started catching myself. I'll be a whole tab stack deep into comparing tools I already have access to, and I'll pause and ask, what am I actually trying to do right now? It's a tiny interruption and it changes everything. Of the 4 questions, there's one that I come back to more than any other. It's question 4. What's the one thing I need to know or have in order to take the next step? That's the daily driver question. The one that works even when you don't have time for the full diagnostic. And I think it's especially powerful if your brain works anything like mine, if you're at all neurodivergent, or if you're someone whose decision space tends to expand until it's paralyzing. Let's pretend that decision space is a balloon, but not just any balloon, one that can grow infinitely without popping. Instead of air, that balloon is getting pumped full of possibilities, options, choices, things that can go wrong, all of it. But that balloon isn't just floating out in the wind. Nope, it's in your attic's crawl space or that tiny little closet in your hallway. It's going to hit a limit somehow, and that limit is what causes a mental pop to paralyze a person into inaction. Neurodivergent brains don't freeze because of laziness. They freeze because that decision space is too large, and the blocker, the limitation, is invisible. You know you need to do something, but you can't see the specific thing that would let you start. Question 4 makes the blocker visible. You don't need to see the whole path, just name the thing that's in the way. That's the intervention. And that summit story? That's where I built this muscle. The summit was the dramatic version. 26 hours, clear stakes, clear result. But now I use the same instinct on small daily moments. Before I open a new tab to research something, I ask, what happened the last time I tried this? Before I sign up for a free trial, what's the one thing I actually need to move? It's become automatic. The summit taught me the skill. Daily practice made it stick. Before we wrap up, I want to give you two quick tools for the week. First, if you're going to read a Best Productivity Tools article this week, and let's be honest, you probably will, do one thing before you click on any recommendation. Ask, who wrote this? Was it a real person or an AI tool? If it is a real person, are they an affiliate? Do they actually use the tool, or are they just summarizing the sales page? The question you ask about a recommendation matters more than the recommendation itself. That's information literacy, and it'll save you more time than any app ever will. Second, before you name your next tool, name your problem, not, I need a better task manager. That's naming the type of tool you need. Try, I keep losing track of my deadlines for my three active projects. That's naming your problem. The words you use to describe your situation determine the solutions you'll find, just like how a librarian's subject headings determine what a search will bring up. Okay, if you want to start somewhere, try this for 1 week. Every time you feel the urge to download, subscribe, or switch tools, pause. Ask yourself two questions and write the answers down. Walk me through the last time I tried to do this. What actually happened? What's the one thing I need in order to take the next step? Two questions, written down, 1 week. At the end of the week, look at your list. You'll see patterns. And those patterns, those are your real systems design brief. Not what some app store thinks you need, what you actually need, in your own words. If you want to go deeper, if you want a structured way to work through your current tool situation and figure out what's a clarity problem versus genuinely a tool mismatch, I made you something. It's called the Question First Toolkit. It's a one-page worksheet with the 4-question filter, a tool audit template, and a week-long question journal prompt. Grab it free in the show notes. The link's in the description. And if this resonated, if you have a tool situation that's been following you from platform to platform, or if you tried the one-week challenge and noticed something surprising, I'd love to hear about it. You can find me at thinklikealibrarian.com or just hit reply if you're on my email list and you hear from me. The best system you'll ever build isn't the one with the fanciest features. It's the one that started with an honest question. So, the next time you feel the pull to download something new, pause. Ask the question first. Think like a librarian. I'm Meredith, and this has been Think Like a Librarian, Systems for Curious Minds. I'll talk to you next time.